Hi, I'm Michelle Sawatsky-Coop, and with a new month having arrived, so has a new episode of our podcast series, Heroes in Our Midst. Today, our hero is Ray Zahab. Now, Ray is quite something. He's a Canadian explorer, ultra-distance runner, and founder of the nonprofit organization Impossible to Possible. In other words, to most of us, he does heroic things. But if you ask him, he simply believes anyone can do anything, as long as they have a passion for it. In fact, I'd say that's part of his passion, to try to convince us all of it. Now, just to name a few of his accomplishments, he's been recognized with the Meritorious Service Cross of Canada. In 2015, Canadian Geographic recognized him as one of Canada's top explorers, and this guy has run 17,000 plus kilometers across the world's deserts and completed unsupported expeditions in some of the coldest places on Earth. And here's the thing. He used to be a pack-a-day smoker. Yeah. So back in 2006, he turned that all around, and he decided, along with two friends, to cross the Sahara Desert by foot. Yeah, the Sahara Desert. Shortly after that, he ran the three coastal trails of Canada back to back. He's broken world speed records to places like the geographic South Pole, ran the length of Lake Baikal in Siberia, ran across the Atacama Desert in northern Chile, and the list goes on. Then, in 2022, Ray was diagnosed with a rare form of lymphoma, and he still hasn't stopped moving. He's written two books about his life and adventures, and he speaks around the world. Are you tired yet? Well, not surprisingly, he didn't have much time to talk, but we packed a lot into the little time that we had, and I first asked him where all of this began.
You know, basically, I didn't really start anything in the outdoors until I was 30. I was a pack-a-day smoker, sometimes depending on how much I was drinking, two pack-a-day smoker before that. I grew up on a horse farm. Like, we were running around, my brother and I, and doing all, but I mean, you know, I wasn't like a sporty kid, right? And until the age of 30, I really didn't do anything. I wouldn't say I was sedentary, because I was baling hay in the summer and this sort of thing and riding horses, but I wasn't an athlete. And I just reached a point in my life after barely getting out of high school, not completing all my studies after, that I was sick and tired of pretending to be happy on the outside and being very unhappy on the inside, unfulfilled, without direction, all those things, lacking passion that we all want in life. And so I decided that something needed to change for me. I am very fortunate. I have a younger brother who is an amazing athlete and, you know, climber and does all these amazing things. And I saw in him a tremendous amount of inspiration. And I thought, wow, maybe if I did the things that he did, my life would be different. And that's basically how it all started for me. So, I mean, you know, I wish it was a more dramatic story than that, but that's pretty much what it was. And I from that point, when I decided to change my life and take a different direction and go into the outdoors with him, I never looked back. And I did everything. That's when I started, you'd mentioned before we got on here, adventure racing. I dabbled in adventure racing with him. I learned how to ice climb and became a proficient ice climber. I joke that I gave a presentation yesterday, and I joked that instead of having a bottle of Jack Daniels in my hand, I now had like a head of broccoli in my hand every day. Obviously quit smoking, changed my life 180 degrees, and realized that I had the same engine to do bouts of high endurance like my brother. And that led me into the world of mountain biking, competitive mountain bike racing, 24-hour solo mountain bike racing, which I did really well at. And then I discovered ultra running. And from that point, I started racing in ultra marathons and winning ultra marathons. I mean, I was not somebody who won anything, and I was winning ultra marathons. All of this happening within 4 years of quitting a pack-a-day smoking habit. And then that's when the doors opened. And I would honestly say that running became my greatest teacher in that time period, because it taught me to never underestimate myself, and that human beings consistently underestimate ourselves physically, mentally, emotionally. From that point forward, I started doing expeditions, and that's where we are today. I've done 40 expeditions covering over 20,000 kilometers on foot. I don't do races anymore. I focus on these very specific long endurance-based events that require me to learn to navigate new outdoor skills, et cetera, whether it's the coldest places on Earth at the coldest time of year or the hottest places on Earth at the hottest time of year.
Yeah, I mean, and the list of places that you have done this, I mean, they're for real, like Sahara Desert, like, come on. I'd love to know what it feels like to be in your skin in an expedition where, how long does it take you? Do you have one you remember you can walk us through? Were there times?
Well,
that,
it's, I mean,
know?
look at, they're all different on average. I mean, I would say, so look at the Sahara was 7,500 kilometers. We were fully supported. Took us 111 days. Running an average of 70 kilometers every day.
Yeah.
No days off. But it wasn't the most difficult thing I've done. One of the most difficult things I did was I crossed the Atacama Desert in Chile, driest place on earth, north to south, solo with minimal resupplies, meaning I was running, it was an average of 60K a day, but some days were 80, some days were a lot less, depending on the terrain. I was navigating through mountains and salt flats and all this. And I would get a resupply from my team, which was basically my buddy Bob and a couple of dudes I knew from Chile. And they had a pickup truck and they would just meet me and I would get water because I couldn't possibly carry all the water I needed. And we positioned those wherever we could conceivably get a four-wheel drive into along the entire 1,200 kilometers. It was 50 plus degrees Celsius every day. A dry, salty headwind. I mean, lack of UV protection. This was in 2011. Hole in the ozone basically above me. So I was burning constantly. It was a very, very difficult project. Contrast that with super cold expeditions crossing Lake Baikal in the middle of winter, unsupported, 650K, or crossing Kamchatka 20 days in Russia and Siberia, unsupported, with my teammate Stefano. They're all different, and they're all, the terms and conditions by which you approach them are completely different.
Yeah. So there has to be moments in all of these, many moments where you kind of go, I don't know if I'm going to make this one, you know?
That happens, right? Occasionally. That happens occasionally. Yeah, well, it does. You literally don't finish sometimes.
Right.
The way it goes.
Right.
But when you commit to doing something that's really difficult, that's on the periphery of what I might think is possible, you have to accept that every now and then when you're trying to get off the launch pad, it just doesn't go well, right?
Well, sure. And it's not like life, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. But that's when, we don't learn anything unless we take risks, right?
Right. So in the risks you've taken and when you've been in those moments, how do you make it through that? Like what makes you take the next step and say, okay, I'm going to try another, like when one totally fails, let's say, how do you?
Well, because from the get-go, I try to approach these things, Michelle, with as much humility as I possibly can. I am simply a visitor to a place that has already been for eons, potentially, rediscovered by indigenous peoples that live there. I learn as much as I can from the people that are from these places. Now, granted, some of the routes I'm doing, obviously, and crossing the Atacama Desert, why would you, right? So I learn as much as I can and get as much knowledge as I can, but I approach it with the understanding that it's going to be physically difficult because I chose to do this. So right away, because it's physically hard, there can be no complaining about how physically hard it is because I decided I want to do this. I mean, I signed up for it, right? So it's part of the terms of the personal contract that you take in doing these things. But it's approaching it with humility and remembering that we are simply there to experience something and to learn along the way and to not take myself so seriously or the conditions that I'm in so seriously. This is self-imposed, right? So you get through it because you keep a reality check on yourself that there are bigger issues in your life that you'll face than the current situation than you're in. So, I think about the day that I'm in, how I'm feeling in the moment, what's my plan and my strategy to complete the day and then move on to the next. And I think about food a lot. So I can't wait. I don't know what I'm going to eat that night or whatever. So, helps.
Fuel in, gets the energy out. I can see that'd be a major topic of thought process for you for sure. So some people might think, well, that's all fine. Get healthy, stop smoking, get back in activity or whatever. What made you do the jump to such extreme things?
Well, like, as I said before, I just sort of like ambled my way through it, doing the things that my brother did. And then I, in the pursuit of these ultra marathons and learning about myself and doing them, which is the only reason I was doing them, because I was learning so much about myself And then it, you see, like, that's why I say running became my greatest teacher. I was running and learning about myself through the running, but the traveling to these different places to do the races, I was learning about the world. And through the traveling and being in these places, I was learning about culture, history, economics, things that I bored me to death in school. But by being experiential, I was voraciously hungry to learn more, right? In one of these races, I met a couple of guys and we became really good buddies. And we said, hey, you know what we should do is try and run across the whole Sahara Desert one time. And so, you know, I always make a joke out of it, but, you know, through 6 degrees of separation and serendipity, Matt Damon heard about it and then decided to make a documentary film out of our run across the Sahara Desert. And lo and behold, we were out there running across the Sahara. Now, I never thought that we'd make it initially. Halfway through, I realized everything that I'd learned from running in that process had taught me that not only were we going to make it, I was 110% sure we'd make it in the end, right? In those last days. And it's a really interesting transition to go through, transformation, if you will, mentally to go through. But at any rate, that's another story. That's how I got into it. And then from the end of the Sahara, when we reached the edge of the Red Sea, I thought to myself, wow, you know, this was really life-changing experience. I think this is what I want to do with the rest of my life. And so it's never been a grand plan where I've said to myself, well, you know what? So I'll start running in ultra marathons and then I'll get really good at that. And then I'll do an expedition and then I'll become a professional explorer. It was never anything like that. It was just very organic in how things came together. Got to the edge of the Red Sea and I thought, wow, this was amazing. What am I going to do now? Well, I think I want to do this for the rest of my life. And then I went to the South Pole and then I went to Siberia and then I went, you know, and all these different things started to happen. Yeah. And here we are all these years later and I'm still doing it.
So what have you learned about yourself? You talk about learning about yourself as you're doing this running thing. And I have sort of two-part question. What have you learned about yourself? And do you think anyone could do what you do?
Oh, absolutely. The answer to B, yes, absolutely. I believe anyone can do anything they set their minds to. Okay. Mm-hmm. We all have within us this capacity for our own version of extraordinary. Okay. So like we all have that in us to, you find something you're passionate about, and you pursue it. And when the pursuit feels easy, I'm not saying it's easy. It's definitely not getting to the start line on one of these expeditions, the fundraising, everything else that needs to happen. It's extraordinarily difficult and stressful. But the pursuit of the passion, the work that it takes, is something that it feels, you know, there's old sayings like, you know, well, if you do what you love, it's not really work, right? It's kind of like that, right? And so that, when you find that thing that you're passionate about, that's a life-changing thing. And it becomes very natural, if you will. Now, what was the first question?
Oh, what have you learned about yourself?
Oh, well, I've learned, you know, it's not necessarily a personal me thing, but that all of us, again, I spent the first 30 years of my life talking myself out of taking chances and doing things and taking risks because I was afraid of failure and afraid of what would I do with the negative outcome that was surely to come, right? Like, I mean, I was pre-predicting. And now I live a life where I just go for it. And I didn't even think twice. It's not even like it's a conscious effort. Okay, I must really try to make the decision to, I'm less risk adverse. You know what I mean? Like I'm willing to take a chance.
Yeah.
So I say yes more than I say no. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think a lot of people listening and people, those of us who walk a different life than that, maybe we don't do something we think is so extreme, but you must have a life team with you, like, you know, family and support. Do you have people who, some of these expeditions might be a little bit scary for your loved ones saying, oh yeah, go ahead. We're
gonna I mean, the things we achieve in our lives, both difficult and extraordinary, very relative to us as individuals. So you can't really compare. You know, I have a friend who's an artist. She's an extraordinary artist. And I see the works of art that she's able to take what's in her brain and in her emotions and apply it. And it's mind-blowing to me. It's like I just can't even comprehend how incredible and extraordinary that is. And she's like, dude, it's just what I do, right? Yeah. So it's very relative to the individual. Yes, I've had a lot of close calls on expeditions. I've had a lot of events in my life that have, you know, my circle has gone like this, right? And really, you know, I have a critical group of people that include my daughters, my wife, my closest best friends that are my, you know, allies in life, right? In my house, my daughters are great athletes. My, you know, older one is on the provincial spring kayak team. That, you know, they are into Nordic skiing. They're into all the sports that they do. My wife's an amazing ultra runner. Look at what I do is my kids. I've been doing this since my kids were born. To them, I may as well work in a cardboard factory. They don't care what I do. You know, like, it just doesn't matter. It's not even consequential. It's what they're doing that's sort of like the big deal in our house. You know?
Yeah. You know, I love that you said that. We can't really compare extraordinary to someone is ordinary to someone else. Like it's relative to who we are.
Just relative. You got one trip on this planet. And I think that in this post-pandemic era, I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and I think we're becoming more aware of ourselves and the fact that life is finite and that what's here today can be gone tomorrow. And to appreciate everything that we have in life and live for now, have an eye to the future, have goals, et cetera, but living for now as well and appreciating the moment that you're in and the people who are around you in your life at the moment. During the pandemic and in that just after, people became so absorbed, I think, by social media and the way it portrays in many ways unrealistic views of how life is supposed to look or what it's supposed to be, and creates among people this this notion that they're not good enough, or they're not achieving enough, or they're not living enough, or they don't have enough money, or they don't look good enough, or they're not ripped enough, or they're not whatever enough.
Yeah.
And that's not reality. Instead of just looking around saying, shit, I'm always in pursuit of something that always seems out of reach, instead of looking around at what you already have. You know what I'm saying?
I totally know what you're saying.
Yeah.
How relevant that is to all of us. And I love that. Now.
Oh, and I was going to say this. So this is what I wanted to say. But I do believe, so I walk through airport, I'm in airports a lot, traveling a lot. And it used to be like 2 years ago, even everybody's freaking staring at their phone. They're not even looking where they're walking. You know what? I'd see about half the number of people now. Most people aren't looking at their phones anymore. And I find it very interesting. And I think that there's something happening. That there's a bit of a transformation where people are grabbing the reins again and saying, to hell with this. I'm going to live. That's why travel is up. It's insane. You can't get on a flight anymore, right? People are traveling. People are moving. People are doing things in their lives again, which is exciting for me to see people living like that. So,
yeah, super exciting. I mean, that's your message, right? When you share your story. A part of your story, too, is you have a cancer journey to talk about that's sort of coming along with you, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, look, it doesn't define me. So, you know, it's like anything else that I'm going through or we go through in our lives. We go through these things that happen. I have a rare form of lymphoma that I'm in currently a remission for, I don't know how long, hopefully years, but, super affected my health. I mean, I felt like a bag of shit and I was, you know, really sick. And then I did chemo and monoclonal therapy for 6 months and came out the other end of it feeling a lot better. But during those treatments, of which would make me really sick, I would spend a few days feeling like garbage. And then I had 25 days until the next treatment. And in those 25 days, my wife would get me off the couch after I'd lay around 2 days. Yeah. And then she'd get me up. We'd go for a walk, 500 meters, no more. That's all I could do. And then after that walk, I would say, okay, now I start moving again. And I would get myself to a point with 10 days to go before next treatment. I would go somewhere and do something epic. Yeah. And yeah, I wasn't at my best and I'm missing red blood cells and all the rest of it that was going on. But I would go and do something so that I would convince myself that A, I would be fit as a fiddle for the next round of chemo, but B, that I could overcome it. You know, and I came out on the end of it last May, I guess. And, you know, my blood work and all that progresses. I'm at a point fitness wise right now that I'm probably faster with my trail running and skiing than I have been in 5 years. That's crazy. Wow. So I'm doing things now that I haven't been able to do because when you have something like that, you slowly degrade and you adapt to the degradation and you push through it. You know, my doctor was saying when he's looking at my blood work, he's like, I have no idea how you were doing these trips these last few years, you know, before I started chemo. And I said, dude, you and me both, like, I have no idea how I did it, but I did it because I just didn't know. I was ignorant. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I just thought I was getting older, or I'm getting tired, or I'm not in good shape for some reason right now, or whatever. I would write it off to everything, to the point where I was like, no, I can't run to the end of my laneway without being winded. Then I knew something was wrong, right? So, and then treatment and blah, diagnosis, treatment, everything else. So, you know, I would say I'm better than I've been in memory.
Incredible. You know, but that speaks to the power of the mind and the power of just the motivation to do something and not underestimating what you actually can do.
Yeah, I think it's in all of us.
Yeah.
You know, I gave a presentation recently at West, and, you know, it was a 1 hour presentation. I didn't talk about this at all.
Right.
And then in the Q&A, somebody had asked me something about resting heart rate and health, and the fact that I say that these things are 90% mental. The other 10% is all in your head when you're approaching the greatest challenges that you have. And then this, the whole journey, cancer journey came up. And the guy's like, why the hell isn't this in your presentation? Like, why isn't it in the body of your presentation? And I said, because it's like one expedition. I refuse to allow this to completely define. It's a huge part of my life now, obviously, for health reasons and future health reasons, because this will eventually come back. But it doesn't define who I am. Yeah. You know what I mean? What defines who I am is how I approach it.
That's right. Yeah. Absolutely. Speak a little bit to the Youth Foundation that you've started, Impossible to Possible.
Yeah. So Impossible Possible, I started that not long after I crossed the Sahara Desert. And the goal with it is my wife and I and my best friend, Bob Cox from California, started this charity. And the idea was, is that first of all, we'd all be volunteers from the start. But the idea was, as volunteers, we would pool our resources and take a group of young people on an expedition, young people 16 to 21 years of age, on an expedition somewhere in the world that was remote, adventurous, week to 10 days long, where they would go and do their own version of running the Sahara, and they would share what they learned about these amazing places with classrooms around the world. And so we've done 15, 16 of these youth expeditions all over. We just finished one last November. Every time there's a different curriculum tied to the expedition. So we bring teachers and filmmakers and all that, and we create this content and teach these educational programs through a live website, to the thread of the adventure that they're on, running or trekking through deserts and forests and mountains and jungles and that sort of thing. It's all free. It's 100% free.
So cool. And to the younger generation, just keeping this going and hopefully building it around the world. Love it. Ray, we could talk about every single one of your expeditions. I know people would be interested. They can go read up on them, I know, on your website and more. But I have some rapid fire questions I want to make sure we get to before you have to leave us.
Hit it. Okay.
And this will lead us to some, I know, some pretty cool stories. Like this first one, you are 100 years old. What is the story you most love to tell?
Gosh. you know what? There's just too many. I think, it's a super, it would probably be like a news story of this past, Christmas holidays, being deep in the Atacama Desert with my daughters and my wife, and we were completely off grid in the middle of the, in these mountains close to Bolivia, way out in the desert. I mean, driving up a riverbed with a 4x4. And then we were like, running and trekking all over and discovering this ancient pottery site just out there in the desert, like Indiana Jones. It was crazy. And so, we took a bunch of photos and all that. We didn't mess with it. But there's all these old fragments of pottery that potentially were thousands of years old. That's the most recent story. That's crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. And getting to do that with my kids too, it was cool.
Who or what do you think people see when they see you? And is there something different you wish they would see?
I don't have the answer to that. I don't know what they see, but whatever they see, hopefully it is something of value to them. And what would I want them to see? I don't care like about that kind of stuff.
What is something people would be surprised to know about you?
Probably that I love to just sit around. I mean, there's nothing better than just sitting around. I like being lazy. I love, if you said food or nap, I would take nap any day of the week.
That did surprise me. What exhausts you?
I think what exhausts me probably the most is, I think, negativity. Yeah, being around, I just can't be around it. You know what I mean? In any form that it takes, I just can't be around that.
Love it. What energizes you?
Positivity. Like, I love being around people that are stoked, that, you know, are, you know, and look at, we all have ups and down days, but I love being around people that really are ready to get after it, you know?
Yeah, totally. What was a moment of intense joy that you have experienced in your life?
Oh, birth of my daughters, period. Like, seriously, those, both those days are the best days of my life.
That was an expedition in itself, huh?
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't believe it.
Who are two or three people who influenced you, and how did they impact your life?
Well, my youngest brother, John, changed my life by inspiring me to want to do the things I do. I would say Richard Weber, the polar explorer, because he, when I learned about him, it was at a time in my life, he owned the building I was renting an apartment from when I first started out this change in my life. And I came to know this man and become very good friends with this man who was a legendary polar explorer, but I just knew him as this guy. Mm-hmm. And learned so much from him, you know, it just about how to approach things, you know, how he raised his kids, all this stuff, you know, and his boys when they were little. I know them now, they're big, they're men, they're successful. And, you know, so he was very inspiring to me. You know, I would say, gosh, a third person, you know, especially probably my wife, Kathy, because she is super intelligent and a great athlete. And I see her, she works like, you know, she's always working on three different things at one time, environmental stuff, social gender stuff, all these things, but yet somehow can still get out there and crank out these big runs or do whatever she needs to in order to go and do the events that she likes to. And I see it sometimes, and I think, shit, like, I mean, I'm training my ass off over here, you know? And she just goes and does these things. So if she can go and do these things, you know, I certainly can get out there and get after it. So
love it. Do you feel like you hope you do this for like a long, long time? Do you have a sort of a thought process that this will be your life? Like, are you hoping to be a 70-year-old who's conquering mountains?
No, I don't. I'm not even worried about it. How are you going to predict that? How are you going to hope for something like that?
That's right.
You know, what are you going to do? You're like, who knows if I'm going to be around in 5 years? Who knows, right? So, like, I mean, I'm more concerned about it. He said, hey, Ray, are you stoked to be doing this stuff still right now? Yeah, totally. Can't wait for what's next. Yeah. You want to do this when you're 70? I don't know. You know?
Guess we'll see what happens then.
Maybe not. Just sit around and drink espressos, laying on a beach somewhere, maybe. Who knows? You know?
Do what surprises us. Ray, you know, Ray, I'm so glad I got to grab a small piece of your time. And, you know, I know a lot of people have followed you and will follow you and are maybe hearing this story for the first time. I'm going, who is this Ray guy? How do I not know more about him? And so you've opened the doors to that. And I love sort of your emphasis on the here and now. And I think there's nothing more important than that, right? We do miss it, I think, a lot of the time, and always think about what we might become. And in the becoming, right, we miss the now. And that stuck out for me today. So thank you. Awesome. I feel like that's been like a sprint to the finish. But thank you. It was amazing.
Thanks so much.
And that's Ray Zahab, international adventurer, husband, father, volunteer, learner, and motivator. What a journey he's been on, a lifelong journey. One that has convinced him that we are all truly capable of doing extraordinary things. If you'd like to know more about Ray and to follow his adventures, head to his website, rayzahab.ca. And when you think something's impossible or it just seems too hard to overcome, ask yourself if Ray would do it. The answer will probably be yes. Absolutely a hero in our midst. Now, Ray's story is one of many that we have discovered. You can find them all anywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts, really, and at drtoogood.com. I'm Michelle Sawatsky-Coop. I'm so glad you chose to listen today, and we'll talk to you again soon.